Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good Friday morning to you, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. It is the day the Lord has made, one of the days anyway, one of the many days, but it is the day that we honor the man that he sent his son to sacrifice his life to save us. It is Good Friday, and we welcome you to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is the third Friday of the month, and that means it is time for Friday in the Garden with Robert. Are you there? Oh, goodness gracious. Got to check on him. Just talked to him not too long ago. Robert Bowden with Lou Gardens is going to be on with us. So I've got to readdress some questions to him about those oak leaves. And then he's also going to talk a little bit about the infamous Easter lily and what we should be doing about the Easter lilies and stuff like that, you know, and the various kinds of lilies that we have. We're also going to talk a little bit about the upcoming Earth Day. And, you know, there's a variety of Earth Day celebrations going on. So if you have a question for Robert, he's a good resource, you know, for the gardening and stuff like that. 516-387-1944 is the number, 516-387-1944. In the meantime, while we wait for Robert, because I just talked to him a few minutes ago. Anyway, he's got a busy day ahead. Retail sales in the U.S., you know, and I talk about retail sales a lot because I, you know, a lot of my jobs in between my career jobs, I guess you could say, have been in retail sales. I did well in retail sales and a variety of types of things. Worked at Burdine's, worked at, which now is Macy's, yeah, down here in Florida. Worked also at a couple of the bridal shops, became a bridal consultant. So the retail sales jobs were the ones that kind of tied me over, not just me, but a lot of people over when, you know, I was having, you know, in between jobs. We spent a lot, and our economy is very retail-oriented down here. So, but anyway, it's made their biggest jump, like I said, since September 2017, with 12 out of 13 categories rising last month. Cars and gas stations led the way. And in the meantime, I think I hear my friend. Robert, are you there? Robert Bowden?
I am. Good morning. I'm sorry I'm late.
That's all right. Better late than never. Really appreciate you having the time to take out, because I know you're a busy man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. What a beautiful day today, at least for a little while.
At least right now. Yeah. Because, I mean, they keep talking about the storm is brewing, the storm is brewing. I'm like, okay.
It's coming.
Yeah, they keep telling people to put their lawn equipment in the pool.
Wow. Because
they're afraid the stuff is going to blow around. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I had some friends up in the Panhandle, and they got it this morning, and they said it was pretty windy. So everybody needs to be careful and be safe before the weekend.
Yeah, for real. So the first question I have for you, Robert, is you talked a while back, and you talked a couple of times, and I guess I'm still not getting it down like I'm supposed to. And I was trying to tell some other people yesterday, and they were like, huh? So, okay, I want to talk about the oak leaves, because you were talking about...
I was going to say, it has to do with oak leaves, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does. Yes, it does. Now, you were talking about not bagging it up, which I greatly appreciate that part. So I don't buy bags anymore, at least not for the oak leaves. But you were talking about how to, I guess, properly compost them or whatever, that you can't – these aren't things that you can put in a regular composter because they don't deteriorate at the same rate as other things that you would put in a composter. So can you talk again about that? Because I've tried to get started on it. I got a couple of big piles, and just trying to make sure I'm doing the right thing.
Well, I have to tell you, I was a little slack this year. You know, I have 2 acres up in Longwood where I raised my family, and there's lots of shrub beds and flower beds, and when you have that kind of space, you really can't afford to put mulch down on everything. So this year, unlike other years, I only got about 150 bags of leaves. I think last year I had over 500. But what I do is go out in the middle of the night and take the leaves off the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And then I save them. And then I put them all around my shrubs and bushes and trees and in my vegetable garden to keep the weeds down. And when I get ready to harvest the vegetables, I simply take a shovel or a rototiller and till those in to the soil. And as that breaks down, it releases acid, which is good for all of the plants. And as they decompose. And the great thing about the leaves here, unlike oak leaves up north, let's say, is the leaves are very, very small. So there's a lot of surface area there for the leaves to break down. So you put them between the rows of the vegetables, and then you till that in. And 10 years ago, I started with white sugar sand as my soil. And, you know, you water that, and, of course, the water just goes right on through. There's nothing to hold the water or the nutrients. And it's just a real waste of water. But over the years, I've added those leaves and turned them into the soil, and now my soil is just black as it can be. And it's very fertile. There's lots of microorganisms in there, and there's lots of earthworms. So these oak leaves that people have thrown away they're throwing away gold is what they're throwing away, because it is the most wonderful stuff. Now, let's talk about compost, because compost can be a little tricky, especially here in Florida, because compost, when you use kitchen scraps and things like that, so they always say you're going to have a first pile. There's going to be one pile. And in that you put some leaves and maybe a little bit of grass and anything else that you may have. And you put in some chicken scraps, as long as there's no fat in there. So, you know, when you peel your potatoes or your squash, that's perfectly good stuff to go into the compost pile.
Okay.
And then you add a little bit of fertilizer, just a little bit, you know, to sort of help get it started. And then everything should begin to rot, and you just simply add on top of that. But it's going to decompose at different rates. So once you feel as though it's beginning to, or it's composted, and there's a really easy way to figure that out, as those scraps and those leaves and things like that start to break down, they release heat. And a good way to tell whether your compost pile is working or not is to stick a broom handle in it, stick it sideways into the middle of the pile. And then if you pull it out and it's warm, then it's starting to work. It'll start to decompose. But some of the edges aren't going to decompose. The stuff on the top isn't going to decompose. So you need to put that into and make another pile with that stuff. So take all the stuff from one pile and make a second pile.
Okay.
And then all of that will begin to decompose. So all the sides and all the stuff on the top, that's in with all the other good stuff now. And then you can begin another pile. Start all over again. And then once that second pile decomposes and everything's nice, it should be pretty much like dirt at that point. You take that and put that into a third pile. So now you've got a beginner, you've got a medium, and you have a finished pile. And it's that finished pile that is just amazing stuff. There's all sorts of microorganisms in there that the plants really like. It helps the plant absorb nutrients. It helps them fight diseases. So if you're serious about it, that's how it would work. These little dome things that people are buying, you throw the compost in there and you just keep adding it. Those don't work. I'm just telling you, flat out, they don't work. So don't waste your money. Now, you can buy these, they're like barrels, and they have a hatch in it, and you throw the stuff in there, and every day you go out and you roll it a little bit, not much. Some of them are not stands, so you just have to turn it a little bit. And that makes everything nice and even, and then over a period of time, that will compost, and then you'll have dirt. It's really good stuff. The only drawback in Florida is that it brings in things that you don't want into your yard. Remember, you've put food scraps in there.
Right.
And now you've got earthworms in there. So you're going to get things that you don't want. It is a cockroach magnet. There's no other way to put it, because they see food in there and they're going to come by, and there's not going to be one or two, there's going to be a lot. You're going to get animals. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you real quick, can you just do you have to put the food scraps in there? I know that the food scraps are good, but can you do some piles that with just leaves?
Sure. Not with just leaves, because
the
leaves themselves aren't going to compost all by themselves. So you need to put other plant debris in there. Like when you harvest your beans, you can harvest beans off of a single bush probably two or three times before they start going downhill pretty bad. So then you take those plants. And this is where people go wrong. You can't just throw that entire plant into the compost pile. You have to cut it up. You have to cut it up in 1 to 2 inch pieces. It has more surface area for the bacteria to break those plants down. So you can't take old collard leaves, for instance, and just put the whole collard leaf on a compost pile. That's not going to work. You have to break it down a little bit before it begins to compost. So you have to take your clippers and you have to bite those things up into little bite-sized pieces and then put them on the compost pile. You can't just throw a bean bush on there. You got to chop it up. So a lot of people don't want to do that work. They just don't want to do it. But no, you do not have to have food scraps in there.
You don't have to,
but you're throwing away perfectly good material. So if you have a barrel, then you can throw food scraps in there and other stuff. The thing that people do incorrectly is they just throw big things in there and expect it, a couple of weeks later to be this miracle dirt, and that's not how it works. You got to chop it up in little tiny pieces, and most people nowadays, that's just too much work. This whole vegetable garden thing is a lot of work. I'm just going to buy it at the store. Yeah.
Yeah.
Happens all. I see it every day.
Yeah. So now I wanted to ask you, because I may have missed a couple things in terms of whether or not you can throw in your pile. Coffee grounds.
Yes.
Coffee grounds. Yes.
What are coffee grounds? What are they?
Beans. Beans.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hard beans that have been chopped up. So, everything in moderation, though.
Right.
I had a guest one day say, my plants aren't doing very well. I just don't understand why. And I said, well, send me a picture, which anyone can do. Send me a picture, and I'll look at it, and I might be able to tell you what's wrong with it, with your plant. So she showed me pictures of her yard, and she must have known someone at Starbucks or something, but she had coffee ground volcanoes around every plant. So, you know, these volcanoes were like 6 to 8 inches tall. And, you know, they were out from the plant probably a foot. And that's just not very smart. So you can put coffee grounds out. You can put them in your compost. You can use them. They're just beans that have been chopped up. So, and they're excellent for getting rid of the scale on your sago palms. So you got those little white things on the bottom side of your leaves of your sago palms. That's called scale. And every one of those little white spots is an insect, and it's covered itself with like a waxy covering. So no matter what you put on them, it's very difficult to kill them unless you use some kind of oil or something. But for some reason, and we're not sure why, but for some reason, coffee grounds underneath sago palms really works. You know, there's lots of theories and lots of ideas about what plants do what and what you can add. But, you know, we've proven over time that coffee grounds do, in fact, get rid of scale. And I'm not sure why, but it really works. So that's a good one. And what else do you have?
Banana peels.
Banana peels are great. Just chop them up.
Chop them up. Okay.
Yep.
Eggshells.
Eggshells are very good. Yep.
Okay.
So eggshells are eggs themselves are sort of unique. Everybody refrigerates them, but you really don't need to, number one. Number two, if you just take the top third of the shell off, so if you're going to use, let's say, half a dozen eggs in a recipe, take a knife and score it around, and then just take the upper third of that shell, and you can throw that into the garden or your compost pile. But what you're left with is a little seed container. So I rinse them out. I rinse them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a little bit of dirt in there. And then I sprinkle some seeds in there. And then cover that with just, you know, like a quarter of an inch of soil. And then I'll plant seeds in there. And it could be beans. It could be, we usually use things that you're going to use in your salad, like arugula. And so when they get about 2 inches tall, you can take that little egg out with the arugula in it. And you can snip that off and put it on sandwiches and put it in omelets, but you have your own little seed containers. I did that yesterday. I had a cooking class here at the gardens, and I used a lot of eggs, and I cut the top third off, rinsed it out really good, and now I've planted seeds in there, mustard and all sorts of stuff. And so when they get tall enough, usually 1.5 to 2 inches tall, you simply snip them off with a pair of scissors, and then you can use the eggshell with the soil in it, put that in your compost pile, or put it directly out into the garden. It's fine. It's great.
All right. That sounds really good. We're going to take a quick break. I thank you for catching me up on that and helping me.
Yes, ma'am.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I wanted to ask you about the infamous Easter lily. So, and lilies in general. So, this is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. It's the third Friday of the month, and that means it's Friday in the Garden with Mr. Robert Bowden, who's the executive director of Harry P. Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. The number, if you have a question for Robert, is 516-387-1944.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight on KHAM Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good Friday morning, and welcome back to G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm starting to get a little bit blustery out there. I'm here with Robert Bowden. He's the executive director of Harry P. Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. It's Friday in the garden, and it's time for the Easter lilies. So tell us about what a real Easter lily is supposed to look like, because I see all different types of lilies around this time. Okay, so what's an Easter lily, and then what are the other lilies, and how do we care for them after Easter, if you can?
We're very fortunate in Central Florida to be able to grow Easter lilies as a plant for the holidays. And then you can take those plants, those bulbs, and put them out into your garden. So while everybody else is growing the lilies, and then they get yellow and they brown, and then they throw them out, we're very fortunate in that we can actually put them in the garden and then they bloom again and again. It really depends a great deal on how much you care for them and how much you water them, whether or not they're going to survive year after year. But they're very easy to grow. You want to give them bright, filtered light. So you don't want to put them in full sun, even in the house, in a bright window. So maybe behind some shears, or maybe out in a screen porch or something like that. They do very well. They require very, very good drainage. When we used to grow them on private estates I've worked at, we would grow them in almost 100% perlite, that little white rock that you see in potting soil. Well, yeah. you're able to get that all by itself. And so we would buy perlite, put a little bit in the bottom of a pot, and then put the bulb in there, and then come up to the top with perlite and water it. And that perlite holds water up to 7 times its weight in water, but it also, once it fills up, it lets the other water drain through. So when you buy an Easter lily, it's very important that you inspect the type of pot that it's in. More often than not, as a decorative touch and to help sell the plant, growers will place these flowering bulbs into plastic sleeves. They could be white, gold, whatever, but they put them in the pot and they're very pretty, so you don't have to see that ugly pot. Well, the problem is you water it and the water sits in the bottom of that sleeve. And it just pools. And, you know, the reason the sleeve is there is so you don't get water on your furniture. We understand that.
Right.
But the lilies, and this same thing with poinsettias, actually, they cannot sit in water. Both of these plants are from areas where the soil is dry. And so you can't water them and then have them sit in water. So you're going to get a beautiful white Easter lily, and you're going to water it, but you're going to water it out, outside of the pot. So you're going to take it out of the sleeve, and you're going to take it over to the sink, and you're going to water it, and you're going to make it nice and moist. And once it's completed draining, put it back into that sleeve. Make sure sometime later on that more water didn't come out and that it's sitting in water. If it did, you need to pour that water out of that sleeve And the sleeves are fine for decoration, but they are deadly for plants. So when we grow them in the greenhouses for sale, we don't grow them in the sleeves. It's before they're shipped. When we put them in boxes, before we put them in the box, we'll put them in a sleeve, we'll put them in a box, and we'll ship them all over the world. But they have to remain very dry. I mean, they have to be well drained. So moist, but well drained. And they'll live a very long time. Once the flower, you'll have four or five flowers maybe. Then once that last flower is finished, and you'll see the very top, there's going to be one flower left, and you'll see little places where the flowers used to be. Cut that off. Cut that old spent flower off. And then take that bulb and plant it out into your garden. But don't plant it in a place where it's going to get full sun at any time during the day. Make sure it gets dappled overstory shade or part shade, because that's what they're going to like. If you give them full sun, they're going to get sunburn and they're going to die. So put them in a high dappled overstory shade, and make sure that you put them in a location where it's well drained. As an example, if you were to live in Hunter's Creek here, it's a subdevelopment of living development in South Orange County. It's real mucky soil there. It's used to be swamp, and it's very, very dark, and it holds on to water really well, which is great if you're growing shrubs and trees. You don't have to water nearly as much, but it's going to hold too much water for these bulbs. So if it's real mucky and it doesn't drain very well, you probably don't want to plant the Easter lilies in there.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
Other than that, it's pretty easy. And we want to, just parenthetically, I also want to say that we're beginning to see amaryllis and crinums and things like that blooming now. And one of the most often asked questions we get this time of year is why aren't my amaryllis or why aren't my agapanthus blooming? And that's real simple. If you think about where these plants come from, like agapanthus, for instance, they come from Africa. And they grow in areas where it's dry during the winter months. So those of us that have irrigation systems very often use them incorrectly. So regardless of whether it's summer or winter, we never change our irrigation clocks of when they come on, what day they come on, and what time they come on. So in the wintertime, yes, it's very dry. We only get an inch and a half of water a month in the wintertime. That's perfect for amaryllis and agapanthus and some of these other lilies, because they want to go completely dormant in the wintertime. They don't want any water at all. And so we let them go dormant. Wow. Up north, when we grow agapanthus in containers, because it's far too cold for them to grow outside, we grow them in containers spring, summer, fall. But when we notice that the temperatures are beginning to get cool, we'll take those agapanthus and we'll put them in a cool, dark building or a greenhouse. But we take those pans, those pots that those plants are growing in, and lay them on their side. So during the winter months, say here, December, January, February, early March, we can't give them any water at all. They have to go completely dormant. And then when the temperatures begin to increase, then you can turn the water back on, and they're going to bloom really well for you. But what happens is that they're getting watered all winter. And these bulbs don't like that. They want to go dormant. So with that indiscriminate watering that we do in Florida, you know, we just water, and then plants that want to go dormant in the winter don't really like it here. So it's that time when you don't add any water in the wintertime, and they go dormant. When they come out in the springtime, they are going to be absolutely gorgeous. This year, if you didn't water, we had a very dry winter. You're going to see some of the best lily of the Nile and other lilies. You're going to see the best bloom you've had in many, many years, because people we didn't get a lot of water, and hopefully people didn't water them. So that's pretty much it. You just keep them nice and dry in the winter, and you could fertilize them a little bit if you want to, but they really don't require it.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Good to know. I did have one other question, but I'm going to ask it when I come back. The number, if you have a question for Robert, is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event, need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast, let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Good Friday afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We have Earth Day coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned something about someone asking you about why their plants wouldn't bloom, and I just kind of wanted to go back to that because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. I have planted in my front garden area, which isn't much of a garden area anymore. It needs a lot of work, but I do have planted there what I thought was an Easter lily. It may not be an Easter lily. It may be something else, but I think it bloomed once in the time that we've been here. We've been here, oh, goodness, I want to say about at least 12 years. We've had problems with that, and then something different. We've had problems with a lemon tree that looks really pretty but doesn't bloom. I mean, no fruit, nothing. So what do you – someone told me one time that some plants have to have partners sometimes in order to bloom. Is that – or can you help me out with that?
So you're talking about planting other plants to help other plants.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, it's a lot of hooey.
Okay.
There's nothing really that scientifically supports planting one plant with another plant to help that plant.
Okay.
A good example. People will say that I should plant beans, and then when I finished harvesting, till them in, because beans or any legume like that, peas, same thing, have the ability to take nitrogen from the air, absorb that, and create nitrogen nodules on the roots. And they think that by growing beans and then simply chopping the bean plant off or rototilling that into the soil, that you're adding nitrogen to the soil. But I have to tell you, that's very highly overrated, because yes, the plants do in fact produce nitrogen nodules, and it would be available to other plants. But number one, you don't know when that happens. At what point during that plant's life span, a bush bean will last 60 days in the garden. At what time during that 60 days does it have the most nitrogen nodules on the roots? Nobody knows. No one can tell that. So beans also, after a certain period of time, if they're not getting enough nutrients, will start using the nitrogen in the roots to keep themselves alive. They don't do it to support other plants. They do it to support themselves. So we really don't know at what point those nodules are at their peak and when's the best time to incorporate them into the soil, because the plants will start cannibalizing itself and use the nitrogen in the soil to help itself. So planting beans like that certainly at some point adds some benefit to the soil, but you really don't know when it's at its peak that you should do that.
Okay.
So people will say, oh, you should plant garlic next to this plant, and you should plant this next to that plant. There isn't any scientific data to back that up. Now, I should tell you that I've been growing vegetables for more than 50 years now. And what we have noticed over the years is that there's fewer and fewer pollinating insects to pollinate our vegetables.
Right.
And a good,
don't we
and
have
a good
bee shortage right now?
Yeah. Well, the honeybees are coming back, so that's much better. But for some reason, we're seeing fewer and fewer bumblebees. And that may sound silly. Yeah, what does a bumblebee do? But bumblebees are excellent pollinators, especially in the vegetable garden where you have these huge, bright yellow squash flowers and things. And the bumblebees are great for that. There probably isn't a better pollinator than a bumblebee for that. And I know some people are afraid of them because they're so big. But unless you really agitate them, they're not going to sting you.
Okay.
But we get questions about squash, for example. You know, we have lots and lots of flowers, and we get little fruit, and the fruit gets about 2 inches long, and then it wrinkles up and falls off. What did I do wrong? Did I water too much? Didn't I water enough? Am I adding too much or too little fertilizer? Is there too much sun? None of that is correct. It's simply because the plant's primary purpose in life is to reproduce itself, right? It's produce seed. It's going to produce seed. On squash, there's male flowers and there's female flowers. And so a bee has to go back and forth for it to pollinate the female flower so it can produce seed. Plants are amazing creatures because they produce this little fruit, and the plant knows if there are seeds in there or not. It can tell whether that fruit has seeds in it. That plant hasn't been pollinated. Those seeds haven't been pollinated. They're not viable. I, as a squash flower or a plant, I'm not going to put a lot of energy into producing a fruit that doesn't have any seeds in it. I'm going to take all my energy producing female flowers and then hope that it gets pollinated so I can produce seeds, because that's my job. If, however, it doesn't get pollinated and it starts to wrinkle, it'll fall off because the plant understands there's no seeds in there. I'm not going to waste all my energy producing a fruit that doesn't have any seeds in it. So I'm going to abort that flower. I'm going to let it drop off, and I'm going to produce some more female flowers in hopes that there's going to be a bee. And that bee will see that flower, and it'll pollinate and produce a fruit. Well, the problem is there aren't enough pollinators. And so we need to somehow attract those pollinators, bumblebees, bees, wasps, even butterflies. We need to attract pollinators to that garden. So you really want, I know people are afraid of them, but bees and wasps and bumblebees, we want them into the garden so they will pollinate the flowers, which in turn then produces the fruit. Have no viable seeds, the plant's going to get rid of that and produce another one in hopes that a bee comes by. So pollinators are extremely important. So my reason for bringing all this up is that somehow we need to attract bees to the garden. So companion planting is what we're calling this, planting a plant in with other plants to the benefit of all or one, is called companion planting. What we have to do now as gardeners is that we have to plant other plants to entice butterflies, wasps, bees to come into the garden. And we do that by planting plants that attract them with lots of flowers. One of the best plants in the vegetable garden to attract bees and wasps and bumblebees is a plant called African blue basil.
Okay.
So what we do...
African blue basil. Okay.
Yep. So we'll plant a squash seed, and then about 2 feet away down the row, we'll plant a African blue basil plant. And then about 2 feet down the row, we're going to plant another squash plant. And you alternate all the way down that garden row. Or if you have, if you're growing plants in containers, you can plant them in the same pot, or you can plant them in a pot that's really close to what you're trying to pollinate. But so we, and this is the first time in the 50 years that I've been growing food that you have to plant other plants to get the pollinators to come visit. Otherwise, you're not going to get any fruit at all. So you plant a squash, a blue basil, a squash, a blue basil, a squash, and down the row. And while the bees are pollinating those flowers on the African blue basil, it's flying around, it's buzzing, and he's, oh, hey, look, there's a big yellow flower over there. I might as well see what's going on over there while I'm here, you know. So I'm going to check that out. Oh, there's a little flower over there, too. I'll go hum around there and see if there's any nectar there that I can get. And in so doing, you're attracting them to the gardens. And then while they're here, they might as well just see what those other flowers have too. And then you're going to get fruit. But that's the only way you get it. And it's amazing. If you don't do it, you don't get any squash. It's really a surprise. And it's sad because that means we're really down on our pollinator numbers. And that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. You did mention butterflies, and because one of the things I thought about when you're talking about attracting pollinators. My understanding is it marigolds that attract butterflies?
They will, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
What other types of attract pollinators do you recommend for our garden?
Lots of different types of flowers that attract butterflies, for instance. And it's important to get those flowers that are dark in color. So penta, as an example, is a great plant to encourage butterflies and other pollinators. But, you know, recently they've come out with light lavenders and pinks and whites and light purples, and they're really pretty. They're really striking, but a bee or a pollinator can't see those with their unusual eyes that they have. They're different than our eyes, and they see things differently. We can see pinks We can see rose and light purples and lavenders and white, but the bees and the butterflies cannot. So you need to get dark purple, dark pink or red. That's what they really go after. So use that as a guide. And also, if you go on our website at leugardens.org, that's L-E-U, gardens.org, we also have a list of other plants that you can use to attract butterflies for the butterfly garden. So that's really just a, I don't know, just you'd have to get flowers that are dark in color, and those seem to attract the pollinators the most. There are over 400 different bees and wasps that are native to the state of Florida. So you wouldn't think that attracting them would be a problem. But it's important to remember that, you know, honeybees and the bumblebees are having a tough time. So we want to plant those plants that are going to attract them. One of the plants that really attracts the bumblebees is any of the plants that produce gourds or pumpkins or the loofah sponge plant. They really bring in the bumblebees, and they love those big yellow flowers. So if you have an empty fence, then plant a couple loofah seeds or maybe some unusual gourds. You can make Martin houses and things out of them, and just plant those along a fence, and they'll just climb on the fence all by themselves. You don't have to fuss with them, and they'll bring in the bees and the butterflies.
Okay, so time is flying. We're here. We're ready for another break. We're here with Robert Bowden. He is the executive director of Harry P. Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. The number is 516-387-1944. Bring your questions or comments, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now it's on for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
New Swiffer Sweeper is redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
Good Friday afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Looking out my sliding glass door, watching this wind pick up outside. So just be careful out there this afternoon. But otherwise, it should be a pretty nice weekend. I'm here with Mr. Robert Bowden, who is with Lou Gardens here. So coming up on Monday, although it seems like the celebrations are getting off to a start already, is Earth Day. Tell us a little bit about what we can do maybe to honor Earth Day and why it's so important in your opinion.
Well, I think it's just like many holidays, you need to be reminded from time to time how fortunate we are to live in Central Florida, and I've raised four children here, and it's just a really wonderful place. And so it's important to remember from time to time that we wouldn't be here if it wouldn't be as a nice of a quality place to live if we didn't take care of the planet. And unfortunately, There are many people that don't care, and they're very short-sighted, and it's all about me. But I think it's incumbent upon all of us to consider how important it is to take care of the planet where we live. And it's important to remember, too, that small changes make big differences. Never underestimate the ability of one person to make a difference. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has made a difference. So find something out there that maybe you don't know anything about, but you'd like to learn a little bit more about it. There are lots of things. You just have to go online, Orlando, and see all the different things that are happening on Earth Day and the things that you can do to participate. Mayor Dyer with the city of Orlando is working very hard to make us a very environmentally sensitive city. And it's important that we all do what we can to make the difference. You know, we're contemplating in the city of Orlando, for instance, of eliminating all single-use products. So we really, we don't want to buy plastic cups and plastic straws and plastic plates. We want to do what we can to keep all that junk out of the landfill. Last night is a perfect example. For years and years, when I teach a culinary class, we go over to the vegetable garden, harvest the vegetables, take them back to the kitchen, and we cook with them. For years and years, we've used countless plastic plates and plastic utensils and cups and all of that. And it's people like Mayor Dyer and his sustainability director in the city that said, you know, we don't need to be using that. We need to find things that are compostable, things that are made out of sugarcane or corn or bamboo that will decompose when they get into the landfill. So last night, for instance, for the very first time in the 25 years I've been at the garden teaching classes, we used china. We used regular plates like we have at home, and silverware. Mm-hmm. And cups and glasses. We didn't throw anything away last night. Everything was, we cooked lots of stuff, and we threw some napkins and things away. But that's just one small thing we can all do. But, and as I said, don't underestimate the ability for one person to make a difference. So go to some of those events. Plant some trees. Plant some trees in your garden. The city of Orlando has a free tree program. If you want a tree, they'll deliver a free tree for you. And you can plant that in your yard. So just go online or talk to some friends, see what's available for you to do and make a difference. Learn about some new things that maybe you didn't know about, and hopefully that'll carry through for the year for you. It's just a great way to remember to take care of the planet that we live on.
What troubles you? What's the main one thing that troubles you that you don't like seeing people do that's harmful, that's creating a big problem?
Rachel Carson wrote a book back in the late 60s. Called Silent Spring. And it had a significant impact on my life and millions of other people on this planet. And what she talks about is indiscriminate use of a wide variety of pesticides and other chemicals that pollute the planet. And her book changed the minds of millions and millions of people. And if you haven't read it, you need to read it. Because I think we can all do something to help people make the place we live in a better place. And I think one of those things that people do, and they don't really think about it that much, and I can understand that, and that's the indiscriminate use of pesticides. You know, they have a problem with moles in their lawn. Well, we may have to learn to live with moles, because really the only way to get rid of moles is to get rid of the food that they're looking for. And they're looking for grubs and they're looking for earthworms. So to get rid of the moles, you have to get rid of their food.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the moles and the earthworms and the other things that are really causing havoc. Because people go to the store and they buy these chemicals needlessly and put them on their lawn. And true, yes, it will kill the bugs, it'll kill the grubs. But once it's done its job, where do those chemicals go?
And especially here
in Florida, with well-drained sandy soil like we have, the pesticides go directly into the groundwater. And I used to live in Long Island, where there are four different levels where people on that island are able to pump water from. And they've already ruined the first two layers with chemicals. You cannot drink water from those two levels. You have now, the utilities are sucking water out of the third level. And sooner or later, that's going to become poisoned because they use poisons to produce potatoes and broccoli and cabbage on that island. And it was shipped all over the world. And now they've destroyed the place where people live. So think very hard about the chemicals that you use in your everyday life, whether it's in your house or out in the garden, and make sure you're using the least toxic product that will take care of the issue that you have. Now, I'm not saying you're never going to use a chemical on your turf or in your garden, because sometimes they just get really tough and you have to get rid of them. Sometimes you have to go to the tough stuff. But maybe if it's that much trouble. Cannas are a perfect example. Cannas are going to get canna worms. I don't care what you do to it. They're going to get worms. And they're going to eat the leaves. They're going to eat the flowers. And it's just an ugly, ugly thing when they get in there. Maybe we don't plant cannas. Maybe we don't need to. There are 6,500 different types of plants at Lou Gardens. We have virtually eliminated the cannas altogether because we've proven that we can produce a lot of other wonderful flowers and shrubs and trees without the use of chemicals. And so we just don't grow cannas anymore because you don't need to. There's enough other things that make your yard pretty. Why in the world would you plant a plant that you know you're going to have to apply a pesticide to make it live? So re-examine those plants that are in your garden. And maybe you don't need all those pesticides. Maybe if you just get rid of that one plant, you don't need to apply those dangerous chemicals to the environment. So read your book. It's still viable. It's still a great book. I think it'll have an impact on those who read it. And don't indiscriminately use pesticides and fertilizers. We have to live here a long time, and there's going to be lots of other people following us that hope that we took care of the planet for them so they have a great place to live like we do.
Okay. And we got maybe a minute left. What's the one good thing that you see that we're doing right now? There's a lot of effort to go green. What's the one good thing you see?
I see a lot of people beginning to have more interest in how they maintain their garden or what they eat and where their food comes from. You know, the young people really do care where their food comes from and what chemicals are being used on them. People are growing their own food now. That's very, very important because only you know what's been applied to the food that you grow.
Right.
So when you put that food in your family's mouth, you need to make sure that it's as safe as it can possibly be. And the only way you can do that is to grow it yourself from seed to harvest. Maybe we don't need to get all these vegetables from Chile and Guatemala. Maybe we just need to grow them in our own backyard and eat what's available in the season that it grows. Eating asparagus in August is stupid because that has to be grown somewhere, and it has to be, you have to be grown with chemicals. So grow your own food, your vegetables, your herbs, your fruit trees. It's very, very easy to do. And don't overthink it. And you can step back and say, I grew this, and I grew it safely, and I grew it, and I'm proud of it, and I know my family is going to be better because of it.
Thanks, Robert Bowden, and happy Easter to you. Really
happy Easter to you.
Thanks.
You're quite welcome.
And
you have a good weekend.
You do the same. And happy Easter and happy Resurrection Sunday to you all. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Have a very blessed weekend. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
When you've done all you can, and seems like it's never enough. And what do you say when your friends turn away? You're all